this is Kendra Brodeen with WomenLawyersOnline.com, and I'm so thrilled today to bring you a conversation with Anne Morgan. Anne is a partner and member of the Board of Directors of Jones Vargas, a Nevada law firm with offices in Reno and Las Vegas, and she is one of the first 100 women attorneys in the state of Nevada. Anne's practice focuses on employment law and human resource issues, and most of her clients are individuals who own businesses or have retired from business. Her practice is split nearly in half between advising employers concerning human resource law and estate and trust litigation, with the balance falling under the rubric of general business law. She has represented most of her clients for many years, the longest being 29 years, and she serves in a general counsel capacity to private individuals and physicians groups, as well as the Reno Tahoe Airport Authority. Anne began practicing law in Reno, Nevada in 1980 with the law firm of Guild, Hagen, and Clark after meeting her future partner and mentor, Clark J. Guild, Jr., while on a jog in Las Vegas in 1979. She left the firm after 14 years to run the Reno office of Morris, Brignone, and Pickering, which later became Schreck Morris. She joined Jones Vargas in 2001 as the general business and civil litigation attorney. Anne has served in the Nevada Board of Bar Examiners since 1991. During that period, she has served in all of the offices of the County Bar Association, including chairing its Judicial Survey Committee, as well as on several other state bar committees. She is currently a Ninth Circuit Lawyer Representative. Anne is a recipient of the Young Lawyers Award and the Washoe Leaguer County Access to Justice Foundation's Pro Bono Award. She is the author of a selection of legal articles, including Subject Matter Jurisdiction, Business Torts in Nevada, and the editorial Sexual Harassment, What Is, What Is Not. She is a frequent speaker at employment law seminars, most recently on the topics of wage and hour issues and email etiquette. She is recognized by the Best Lawyers in America and Chambers USA, America's leading business lawyers, as one of the top employment law attorneys in Reno. Anne has been happily married for 30 years to Bruce Beasley, the man she met at the University of Nevada, Reno, which is also known as UNR, and chased to law school. They are proud parents of two college students. Anne graduated from UNR with a bachelor's degree in English, and she obtained her law degree from the University of the Pacific McGeorge School of Law. She is admitted to practice before the state and federal courts of Nevada and California and is a member of the Washoe County and American Bar Associations. She is very active in her church, Trinity Episcopal Church, serving as its chancellor. She also serves on the board of the Nevada Women's Fund, a nonprofit organization that supports the education and funding of women and families. So thank you so much, Anne, for being here today.
Thank you for having me.
You're very welcome. Anne, I'd love to just jump into the substance of the interview and invite you to think back on your life and your legal career, your educational career. I'm wondering if you feel like you have always been good at and adept at juggling the different balls you have in the air, the different work and life commitments and priorities you have, or if you feel like there was a critical point in your life or your legal practice where you decided to do things differently and make a more conscientious decision to balance your life in a different way.
I think I would have said before this interview started this morning that I pretty much have always been pretty good at the balance part. But this morning was a textbook case in why life doesn't always go the way you plan it. I planned to be at this interview, but I did not count on my daughter from college asking me to edit a paper, and I did not plan on it taking more time than I had allotted, which made me rush to be here. And so I had to yield on a number of things. I had to not be dressed perfectly. I had to not be sitting in my chair prepared. I had to realize I was just going to have to let myself off the hook and things might fall apart. So I don't know that I've ever had a conscious decision to change or rebalance my life other than to stop cursing at myself as I was going to be late or as things were not going to play out the way I anticipated.
Well, I think when you say that you would have said you were always adept until this morning, I think that's also a textbook case of how you get it done. You know, you are able to to really live by your priorities and help your daughter and do what needed to be done by her, and yet you were here on the call. And fortunately, it doesn't matter if you're dressed beautifully because it's an audio recording.
And I did think about that.
But even being able to take into that consideration, think, do I, you know, maybe I'd prefer to be dressed up, but I just have to get done what I can get done to be here on time and do what I need to do, and whatever has to give to make that happen. So it sounds like even in the midst of that maybe textbook case of it not going perfectly, you demonstrated how you make it work even with some sorts of things thrown at you when you thought you had it under control.
I'd say that's a good description. I mean, I actually thought this morning, I thought, well, this pretty well sums it up.
This is what it looks like.
That's exactly right.
The dance looks like. That's right. And what would you say then has been your biggest challenge? What have you faced that you would say has been the biggest adversity or struggle that you've had in trying to balance and trying to create an alignment between who you are professionally and who you are personally and those two sides of your life? What's been your biggest challenge?
A desire to be perfect in all things at all times. Mm-hmm. And in my family, that's translated into trying really hard to be in the present when I'm with them. I have gone so far as to try to come up with physical ways to try to remind myself to slow down, take a breath, be present by taking off my shoes when I walk in the door. Instead of just blasting in. And in my professional life, it's been, I mean, the thing I have tried to do to make it better is to not take things personally from the judge or my opposing counsel or my partners.
Mm-hmm. It's so hard to do that sometimes when we personalize, and I don't know if, I feel like women are maybe more apt to do that, to take someone's maybe criticism or words personally and let them affect us more than we at least see men. Maybe they do as much as we do, but I don't see men doing that quite so much, internalizing someone's their communications or their words and letting us feel bad about ourselves. But I think as women we do that, and it sounds like that's something that you faced a challenge in taking that too personally. And then is that something you feel just came with maturity and age and experience, or did you do something conscientiously to stop taking those words personally?
I think it's a total experience issue. Sometimes, and it actually comes back to something that I think women do more than men, and that is we put up amazing walls ourselves. Others don't put them up. We put them up. And we put them up because we internalize so much more, I think, than most of our male colleagues do. At least that's my observation.
I agree. And I think sometimes it's something that's it's a quality about us that makes us sensitive and empathetic and sympathetic to others, and yet allowing ourselves to internalize things so much can also be incredibly stressful and hurt what we think about ourselves and how we feel about ourselves. So when we can stop doing that, and like you said, sometimes it's just a matter of maturity and growth and experience. But the sooner we can do it, probably the better.
I do think that's true. I think we improve our own quality of life if we can learn to let stuff go a little bit more.
And I love what you suggested in terms of facing the challenge of trying to be all things at once, and instead trying to create maybe even a physical reminder, a physical separation between the different aspects of your life. Just something as simple as taking your shoes off at the door as a reminder that I'm home now and I can take a breath and now engage with my husband, in your case, and kids, and be take on that role in a fuller way than I was, say, 3 hours ago when I was at the office. So that's a great tip, something that sounds so simple but can make a big difference. And what would you say then on sort of the flip side of being your biggest challenge, and maybe it's related, maybe it's not, but what has been your biggest lesson or the thing that you have learned that you would say has been the most powerful lesson along your journey, be it professionally or personally or that place in between, that has helped you achieve a sense of of balance or bringing together the different roles that you fill in your life?
It is complementary to my last answer, and that is to let myself off the hook, to keep my own counsel when I'm upset at the firm or at my partners, and to let myself off the hook. It's a hard thing to do, but I have consciously done it with respect to a number of large matters over the last 30 years of my practice, both in my marriage and in my practice.
Just that we can't be perfect all the time, and there are those moments where things go great, and there are those moments for you this morning maybe that the things don't go as expected, and it's okay. That's what happens sometimes, and to forgive ourselves.
The little one's easier. I mean, this morning, by the time this call started, I was okay other than engaging in a little reflection about it. Mm-hmm. The bigger ones are harder, and
yeah.
I do not think, I certainly have taken on some things years to get over something, and then I have listened to another woman expressing a very similar experience and have gotten a keen insight instantaneously and thought, aha, I need to let this go. But generally because I listened to another woman.
And you're saying that you hear another woman expressing sort of some of the...
I'll hear another woman expressing, hanging on to some anger or some hurt or some slight or some perceived unfairness and think, oof, I think that's what I sound like. I don't want to sound like that. And then it's just like a little key turning in a lock. And I have consciously had that happen actually within the last month.
Wow. It sounds like it's something that you've experienced. I mean, it's very recent, or it's very almost palpable to you, those moments where you've seen yourself in someone else and maybe not liked what you've seen, and had the self-awareness to say, maybe that is what I look like, or that's what I sound like, or that's what I even feel like. I can see how she's feeling, and I recognize that, and I don't want to feel that way. And learning from her, even though she has no idea that you're learning from her in the moment.
That's exactly right.
And I applaud, and I also recognize and take note of the self-awareness that it takes to do that, because sometimes we're so quick to just get through life and not seize those moments that are potential moments of significant teaching, life-changing teaching that come in the most unexpected ways. But if we're not open to it and self-aware and just aware in general of what's going on around us, we might miss that. And if we miss those moments, then, you know, in this case, we're stuck with those feelings that we could have released or we could have let go, but we missed the opportunity to learn about that. So I think it's great that you even saw that in the moment and chose to learn from it. And what would you say then, you know, you've articulated that big lesson of letting yourself off the hook and letting go of some of those things, like you said, a slight or a word or something else that is festered inside, just letting that go and letting yourself off the hook as well. What would you say are maybe two or three strategies or tools that you've used, and maybe they're related to some of what you just talked about, maybe they're completely distinct or a combination of the two, that have been more tactical or practical? You mentioned taking something as simple as taking your shoes off when you come home. Are there other things that you've used or found to be meaningful as you've created a bit of balance in your life?
I have, and the first always comes back to my relationship with my spouse. I have a great husband, and I frequently have taken advantage of that by not recognizing how critical that relationship is to my success personally and professionally. And so my reminder to myself is to continually nurture that relationship, because it has the greatest potential for my long-lasting satisfaction, more than any legal work I do, no matter how miraculous the result.
Mm-hmm.
And I also think it's important, this is somewhat related, to choose your battles. I just don't think every slight deserves that you requires you engage in nuclear war. If I've got an opponent who is unduly hasty in running to the judge, before I slam a motion asking for contempt or sanctions, I try to consciously pick up the phone and get things back on track. And I try to do the same thing with my partners, same practice with my partners if I'm upset. And then the last thing, which I have found to be the most helpful, is to not confide my fears or my unhappiness to my colleagues or my staff. I really try to limit that to my family or my close friends, because I have found that people who like me or are engaged in my success, who may be colleagues or staff, will try to help me in a way that defines me generally in a way I don't want to be defined. So I have found that to be very, that is a true life lesson I have learned.
So with that, I'm wondering, could you say a little bit more about, you know, how they try to help you that ultimately does not serve you?
Sure. If you confine a fear, typically I feel better once I've confided. Mm-hmm. And I'm moving on. But the person to whom I've confided has not moved on. They have me fixed at that point. And so they may try to help me out in a way that doesn't help me out, because they frame me or my issues completely different from where I am at the time they begin to frame it to either another partner or an office manager or opposing counsel. And I have found that to be much more problematic, much more problematic. I do much better when I try to keep my own future in my own control, mm-hmm. and not rely on others to set my course.
I see.
I don't know if I've been specific enough.
Mm-hmm. No, that makes sense. It's just it's an interesting way of looking at it, because when you first started to answer the question and mentioned not confiding your frustrations to colleagues or staff immediately, you know, I thought, oh, you know, of course, that's great advice, and you wouldn't want to do that for confidentiality reasons or things like that. But your answer then just went in a different direction and a deeper level of how that does not serve you in ways that they are actually trying to be helpful. They're not trying to undermine you or break a confidence. They're trying to help. But how you feel that in ways does not help you, does not serve you or move you forward. It's just a very interesting way of thinking about why we shouldn't confide those frustrations in certain people, where we can place them with others, like you said, your loved ones or your spouse, but with maybe colleagues or staff, that's not as helpful a place to unload those frustrations.
I think it's particularly important for women.
Mm-hmm. And also going back to your relationship with your spouse, the first thing you mentioned, it's so true, and I love how you articulated it, and I hadn't thought of it in this way before, but that when you have a supportive spouse, and I am blessed to have one as well, they are such a key ingredient to helping you create success professionally and personally. And I know for myself, and I'm guessing for other women, sometimes we do take them for granted and just assume, you know, they'll always be there, they'll always be supportive, and we don't take the time that we could to nurture that relationship. And yet, as you said, it is more important to our ultimate success than anything we write, anything we do in court, any way we serve a client, is having that core support behind us when we are blessed enough to have that. And so it's a great reminder to those folks who are listening who have a spouse or a partner who is supporting them, that's, we don't just nurture the relationship to be nice, but it also has bearing on who we are professionally.
I think I am nothing without a happy spouse.
Yeah, I think it's so true. And I also am guessing, just from the emphasis and the importance that you've put on your relationship, even in the bio that you shared, in what you've shared on the call, that is one of your highest priorities. And we would, you know, and I share that as well, and that nothing matters. If I had to give up the practice, if I had to give up my business, if I had to give up a lot of things, I would give them up in a heartbeat compared to my relationship with my spouse and my children as well. And so just having that sense of our priorities and what we spend our time and attention and focus on helps keep things in line as well.
I could not agree more.
And with it, and there's just, and also, I mean, the other strategy that you mentioned was choosing your battles and not allowing yourself to get sucked in to other things that come along. As you mentioned, a couple examples of just, you know, needing to respond to an ornery opposing counsel or something like that, to not allow yourself to be engaged. Could you speak a little bit more about that in terms of choosing your battles?
Sure. I'll talk about two things. One is clearly in the legal business, and I do a fair amount of litigation. Everyone has a strategy that works for them. My partner and mentor's strategy did not work for me. But what does work for me is to decide consciously not to make my battle with opposing counsel personal, no matter what they try to do, because it takes two. Mm-hmm. So I never refer to them by name. I never refer to them in pleadings. I always view it as a client issue. And I don't care if I have to take a little hit on my ego to accomplish my client's goals. I would rather take the path that results in a greater goal for my client, and frequently that means overlooking the personal attacks and the personal slights. Ditto with my partners. I once got an email from a partner that was just terrible in that it accused me of not communicating a certain amount of information, which I had communicated ad nauseum. And I sat at my computer and banged out a response to tell him all the times I had told him about the item. And then, just like Tom Hanks, who hit the delete button and You've Got Mail, I went, delete, 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 delete. Mm-hmm. And physically pushed my chair away from my desk, walked around the corner, went in and said, let's talk. 20 minutes later, we were back on the same page. We didn't agree, but we were back on the same page. If I'd sent the email, he'd have printed it off, and it would have been there forever.
Right, right. Just taking that deep breath sometimes, and like you said, just sometimes we have to type the email or write it out just to get it out of our systems before we go have the conversation. Sometimes I think that's part of the process, but then like you did, just walk away from it and not fight the physical temptation to press send when we're in the heat of the moment and go have the conversation instead. But it can prove to keep the relationship in a much healthier place and, like you said, prevent future problems that could come from having that your words now into infinity printed in an email and accessible words that came out of a moment of passion rather than, you know, that deeper conversation that you were able to have.
Right.
And as you think about it, if there were any other words or any other counsel or advice that you could share with women attorneys who are listening or who are reading, what would those be?
From the female side, I think it's important to be pleasant. I think it's important to be pleasant to be around. I think practicing law is really hard, and I think everybody in your office knows that. And so I don't think you need to make it more difficult by being difficult to be around. And if you find that everybody around you seems to be a jerk or uncomfortable, then maybe you ought to look at yourself. I also think it's important to laugh at yourself. I'm one of these people who never gets the joke. But I'm always keen to laugh at the fact that I didn't get the joke. I think it keeps me more focused and more grounded.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And it's so nice to hear your words and just think of the idea of being pleasant and being nice to be around and not taking yourself too seriously. It's easier for everyone who's around you, and I love what you said about when everyone around you is being maybe hard to get along with, or you're finding yourself having problems with all sorts of people, sometimes that's a sign that something needs to shift within ourselves and that we're doing something, and it's so hard to take a look in the mirror and try to discover what that is, but in the big scheme of things, it will move us forward personally and professionally and make us easier to be around, make people want to be around us.
I hope so.
Yeah. Oh, I think so. It's you can see that sometimes in motion. Sometimes when you see someone on that path where, you know, they're you meet someone who's switched law firms 6 times in 5 years and are always saying, I couldn't get along with this person, I couldn't get along with this person, I couldn't get along with this person, you start to think to yourself, if not say out loud, maybe you should think about what's going on with you. I mean, just see it as a symptom or a sign that there's something that you could work on within yourself. And so I appreciate you bringing that out and saying, if you're seeing that as a symptom in your own life or your own practice, sometimes, you know, it's not something that you're responsible for, but there's always that moment where we can learn, as you suggested earlier, learn from other people what we might need to look at in ourselves. That's so wise. Thank you for sharing that.
Welcome.
And before we wrap up, is there any closing words or anything else you'd like to share, or do you feel like you've shared so much already? I don't know. Maybe I'm trying to suck out everything that I can because I just love what you're sharing. But anything else before we wrap up our conversation?
You know, I really like practicing law. I like it more today, 30 years down the road, than I did when I started. I really ask every associate who starts here, and particularly the women, I said, I want you to be like me. I want you to have this kind of satisfaction. I'm convinced I have it today because I have worked hard and I've been lucky. I was lucky I got a great spouse. I work hard on my relationship. I was lucky I got a great partner and mentor. I worked hard never to disappoint him. And candidly, I was lucky because I got a great secretary who has been with me for almost 20 years, and I work hard to make sure she knows how much I appreciate her.
Yeah. And that's good, too, to let people know that we appreciate them and that they mean a lot to us. Because, like we mentioned earlier about a spouse or partner, we can also take for granted those support people professionally that if we think about our lives and our careers without them, it's terrifying. So we can help that relationship along by making sure we let them know that we think they do a great job and that we appreciate what they're doing for us.
I could not agree more.
And before we wrap up, I'd love to give you a chance to let others know a little bit more about how to connect with you, how to learn more about you or your law firm. So could you share a website or anything else that you'd like to share with listeners and readers of this information?
Sure. I'm a proud partner and board member of JonesVargas.com. That's our website, JonesVargas.com. If you go to that particular website, you can see all of the folk in our firm. We're one of the largest firms in the state of Nevada. I'm proud to say that in our Reno office, we have 4 women partners, and we only have 12 partners, so I believe that we are doing our part to promote our gender in the practice of law, and I believe this law firm is a great place to practice it. So if you are interested in work in Nevada, we have a great firm, I have great colleagues, and we would look forward to anyone who had any further questions to go to our website, JonesVargas.com.
Perfect. Thank you so much for sharing that. And I thank you. I thank you for your time today. And as you mentioned, you had sort of a hectic morning, so I doubly appreciate your effort to be here and to be very present and very giving so much of yourself and your insights and what you offered this morning, especially in the midst of a little bit of chaos this morning in your own life. Thank you for really showing up and giving so much of who you are and what you've learned over the years.
Thank you.
Mm-hmm. You're very welcome. Well, with that, we'll close out our conversation with Anne. I'm grateful to her, and I'm grateful to anyone who's here today listening, reading these words, investing some time in yourself to maybe explore a little deeper what could make you a better person and a better lawyer. And I hope you found something, and I trust you found something in this conversation that might open your eyes a little bit to the ways that you can improve your life and your law practice. So until next time, this is Kendra Brodine of Women Lawyers Online, wishing you real success always and in all ways. Thank you for being here. Bye-bye.